So continuing with chapter 16, spontaneous devotion, further described. Then Michael, you had a question? Question is basically, what is the difference or in mood between the maidservants of Srimati Radharani and the girlfriends of the Shakyis? See, this is what is mentioned here. Here. This devotional service and conjugal love can be divided into two categories. One is indirect conjugal love, the other is direct. In both of these categories, one has to follow the particular gopi who is engaged in such service in Goloka Vrindavan. To be directly attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in conjugal love is technically called keli. This keli performance means to directly join with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are other devotees who do not wish direct contact with the Supreme Person, but who relish the conjugal affairs of the Lord with the gopis. Such devotees enjoy simply by hearing of the activities of the Lord with the gopis. This development of conjugal love can be possible only with those who have already engaged in following the regulative principles of devotional service, specifically in the worship of Radha and Krishna in the temple. Such devotees gradually develop a spontaneous love for the deity. By hearing of the Lord's exchange of loving affairs with the gopis, they gradually become attracted to these pastimes. After this spontaneous attraction becomes highly developed, the devotee is placed in either of the above-mentioned categories. And then in the previous place, we must always remember, however, that such eagerness to follow in the footsteps of the denizens of Braja, Vrindavan, is not possible unless one is freed from material contamination. In following the regulative principles of devotional service, there is a stage called anartha nivritti, which means the disappearance of all material contamination. Sometimes someone is found imitating such devotional love, but factually he is not freed from anarthas or unwanted habits. It has been seen that a so-called devotee proclaims himself a follower of Nanda, Jashoda, or the gopis, while at the same time his abominable attraction for mundane sex life is visible. Such a manifestation of divine love is mere imitation and has no value. When one is actually spontaneously attracted to the loving principles of the gopis, there will be found no trace of any mundane contamination in his character. Therefore, in the beginning, everyone should strictly follow the regulative principles of devotional service according to the injunctions of the scriptures and the spiritual master. Only after the stage of liberation from material contamination can one actually aspire to follow in the footsteps of the devotees of Vrindavan. It is said by Rupa Goswami, when one is actually liberated from material contamination, he can always remember an eternal devotee in Vrindavan in order to love Krishna in the same capacity. In developing such an aptitude, one will always live in Vrindavan, even within his mind. So we see that the process for getting to this platform of following in the footsteps of the devotees to Vrindavan is the same. One is following the regulative principles of devotional service, of deity worship, and when one becomes freed from the contamination of the material desires, then at that time, by having heard and so much about the service of these devotees, one may develop then the spontaneous attraction to serve like they are serving. Then one follows in the footsteps of those devotees by always performing one's service, but always remembering those devotees in Vrindavan, in their service, how they are serving the different pastimes, how they are serving the Lord like that. So now the gopis, then those who associate directly with Krishna, then they are. They have a desire to please Krishna by direct association. They want to be with Krishna and please him in so many ways like this. And so all the gopis of Vrindavan, then not all gopis, but those who have a conjugal relationship with Krishna, then this is their mood. Then within this you have Srimati Radharani, who is the best of all these gopis, and then she has her friends who are Shakis, who are like her equals, and they all together then help Radharani serving Krishna. So they also have a direct relationship with Krishna, but they generally act in a capacity to see that Radharani is with Krishna. But then Radharani always arranges that they also spend time with Krishna. And in this way then they create a very nice atmosphere for Krishna to enjoy himself. But the maidservants, then they don't want to have physical contact with Krishna. They want to assist in creating the pastimes for Radharani and the other Shakis to be with Krishna, because their happiness is seeing that the others are happy. So then in this, there is a service mood towards Srimati Radharani, not a friendship mood. The other Shakis, they are friendly with Krishna, with Radharani. They're like friends, equal Shaki Ras with her, and they have a conjugal Ras with Krishna. But the maidservants, they have a servitor rasa with Srimati Radharani and a conjugal relationship with Krishna. So because of the servitor relationship with Radharani, their interest is to see Radharani and Krishna together. And then they don't want to themselves be directly enjoying in these pastimes. They simply want to help arrange these pastimes. So because of this, then their position, they are actually able to assist in the intimate pastimes more than the Shakis. Because Shakis being equals, Radharani is embarrassed if they're around, if she is spending time intimately with Krishna. So, but the maidservants, because they're in a servant mood, then they can still assist in the pastimes at that stage, while the Shakis cannot. So basically, is they don't want to directly enjoy with Krishna. They have a conjugal relationship with Krishna, but they experience that through seeing Srimati Radharani with Krishna. A question is, do they understand, but then they just don't. They understand because they have a particular understanding. See, it's like this. Radharani is alone always, then that carries on one flavor. See, it's like all you have is Radha and Krishna, right? Everything in the universe is all their expansions. All the aspects of Vishnu Tattva, and even the transformation into Shambhu, this is all Krishna. And then all the aspects of Shakti is Radharani. And in this way, so the two of them together, Krishna is the complete personality of Godhead. And she is the complete, or Sarup Shakti, the complete form of the energy. So the two of them, they can completely, Radharani can completely please all of Krishna's desires, because they are both the complete forms of the energy and energetic. Now, because all aspects are in Krishna, he also expands these, and so they manifest, and then they can be manifest in very complete ways. Because in Krishna, they're just a part of the thing. Right? It means the aspect of some aspect in Krishna's personality. He is complete, so his personality is complete, perfect. And everything's perfectly balanced and sweetens. And now you can bring out one of those aspects of his nature, his qualities, and then in that way, in that expansion, you know, one of the aspects of Vishnu Tattvas, then with that also, then the associates, the atmosphere, the dham, the paraphernalia, the pastimes, all that will perfectly match with that particular aspect of his personality. And then that will then manifest Yeah, then he'll manifest those. So Radharani will also expand as the Lakshmis to perfectly match that mood. But because this is a partial aspect of Krishna's nature, and Radharani's partial aspect, she can completely please him in that. But it's only it's complete, it's perfect, but it is not as full a manifestation as Krishna and Vrindavan. Right? So now, that means then to enhance the relationship, because they are energy and energetic, then you have the aspect of Swakya. Right? The Swakya is not as exciting as Parakya. Right? Because Swakya means like married relationship. Parakya means paramour relationship, paramour. So then, the Swakya, because then it's half the body has been given, and then so many duties are there in the house and everything's established. It has its flavor, but it doesn't have the same excitement as the Parakya, right? So then, that aspect is created, right? Parakya is there, is tasted in Dwarka and in Vaikuntha and this. But in Vrindavan, then the gopis are all married. So then they have their husbands, everything, but then they go and spend time with Krishna. So the Parakya aspect is there. Right? Now, Radharani is married, okay, but then Radharani will always be coming. So therefore, then you have all the other gopis, the other camps of gopis. So maybe Krishna will be with her, maybe he won't. So then it maintains that the Parakya aspect is maybe you can be with the person, maybe you can't. Right? Swakya, it's your right to be with the person. Parakya, you don't know if you can be, because it's not your right. Right? You understand? Like that. So then that Parakya aspect then is brought out, because there's so many other gopis that Krishna could be with, and they're trying to get Krishna's attention, make arrangement, and take him to their places. Right? You understand? So, that is only the gopis that are with Srimati Radharani, like the Astasati and some other gopis. But most of the gopis are not. Most of the gopis, they head their own camp. And they are trying to get Krishna with them, and they have their friends and assistants. Right? So that way then, but for those who are worshippers of Radha and Krishna, the others are there, but basically they're there, but they're not part of the scene. You know, just like Mother Jashoda and Nanda Baba are there, but they're not part of the conjugal scene. It just, Krishna, that's his house, that's his parents, so when he's with them, then they can't manifest their rasa with Krishna. Right? Very, very hidden. When Krishna is then with the, so now, of all the gopis, then Radharani can please Krishna the best. Right? She can completely satisfy Krishna in all ways. That will come up later, we'll see in the Nectar Devotion. So the other gopis, then they assist in these pastimes, but to please Radharani, then she also makes arrangement that they're also with Krishna. Right? It expands the fun. Because whether you're with two people, then certain kinds of conversation you may have. But if you're with 8, 9 people, then the conversations can go in so many different ways. They can have so much more fun. Right? Like that. So therefore the Shakyas are there. And then Radharani is with her friends. She feels comfortable and all these things. And then, they put Krishna on one side and then on the other and all these things. But the maidservants, because they know that only Radharani can fully satisfy Krishna, in their understanding, or their, how you say it, their desire in the conjugal relationship, they only want to see Radha and Krishna together, because then Krishna is pleased the most. Therefore, they don't want to associate directly with Krishna. Because for them, why they should be with them? Krishna could be with Radharani. Right? Means if Krishna can be with them, Krishna could be with Radharani. So their point is Krishna should just be with Radharani. Right? But they have no problem with the other Shakyas. Right? But their focus is seeing that Radharani is with Krishna. The gopis in Radharani's group, they all consider those in other groups as rivals. They may have sometimes on certain situations a working relationship, right? And they'll have respect for them. They're Brajavasis, they're also servants of Krishna. So they have respect, but they don't mix very intimately with them. Like that. And it's like they can do what they like, we don't mind. We wouldn't do it. They run a camp separately from Radharani's, we wouldn't do it. They can do it, we don't mind, but we wouldn't be caught dead doing it. You know, like that. So there's a respect. So then, carrying on, parenthood or friendship. Devotees who are attracted to Krishna as parents or as friends should follow in the footsteps of Nanda Maharaj or Subal, respectively. Nanda Maharaj is the foster father of Krishna, and out of all the friends of Krishna, Subal is the most intimate in Brajabhumi. In the development of becoming either the father or friend of the Lord, there are two varieties. One method is that one may try to become the father of the Lord directly, and the other is that one may follow Nanda Maharaj and cherish the ideal of being Krishna's father. Out of these two, the attempt to directly become the father of Krishna is not recommended. Such a development can become polluted with Mayavad in personal philosophy. The Mayavadis or monists think that they themselves are Krishna, and if one thinks he himself has become Nanda Maharaj, then his parental love will become contaminated with the Mayavad philosophy. The Mayavad philosophical way of thinking is offensive, and no offender can enter into the kingdom of God to associate with Krishna. In the Skanda Puran, there is a story of an old man residing in Hastinapur, capital of the kingdom of the Pandavas, who desired Krishna as his beloved son. The old man was instructed by Narada to follow in the footsteps of Nanda Maharaj, and thus he achieved success. There is a statement in the Narayana Vyuha Stava prayers that persons who are always engaged in thinking the Lord is their husband, friend, father, or well-wisher are always worshipable by everyone. This spontaneous love for Krishna can be developed only by the special mercy of Krishna or his pure devotee. This process of devotional service is sometimes called Pushti Marg. Pushti means nourishing, and Marg means path. Such development of sentiment nourishes devotional service to the highest standard. Thus it is called the path of nourishment, or Pushti Marg. The Vallabha Sampradaya, which belongs to the Vishnu Swami sect of Vaishnava religion, worships Krishna in this Pushti Marg. Generally, devotees in Gujarat worship Balakrishna under the heading of Pushti Marg. So then if one wants to develop the parental relationship, one follows in the footsteps of Nanda Maharaj. Yeah. And friendship then Subal. One the same principle as one doesn't want to directly means be the how you say parent. One wants to assist. So then in the parental rasa, so many of those who are assisting, the elder gopis and the elder gopas and that, they also directly may deal with Krishna. But they see themselves as assisting Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda, like this. So that is there. Because no one can be more perfect parent than Nanda Baba and Mother Yashoda. So why should we get in the way and try to put ourselves in the place? Same as no one is more intimate as Subal. So then why we would want to try to have a relationship established on our own separately than with these other devotees? Just in the same way as the gopis, they want to worship Radha and Krishna together. So whether they want to be shakis or whether they want to be maidservants, then, but they want to see Radha and Krishna together. They want to serve Krishna through Radharani, or they want to serve Krishna under Nanda Maharaj or under Subal, like this. So in this way, then, the relationship is nicely established. So this is easy. Then the spontaneous devotional service becomes easy because one is meditating upon those devotees. They are already perfect in doing their service, so we don't have to speculate. Otherwise, the Mayavadi thinks, I have become Nanda Maharaj, but what does he know about pleasing Krishna? Right? What this Mayavadi knows about how to be father of Krishna, he doesn't know. So neither will he become a proper devotee, and neither will he please Krishna. Like that. So one always follows in the footsteps. Therefore, we see the principle of following others is very important. Following under our spiritual authorities, following under the spiritual master, the temple president, the GBC, respecting senior devotees, all these different things. Because that's the way it is in the spiritual realm. It means those who are on the top platforms who follow this principle. Those who are on lower platforms who just want to work on their own, they generally stay in the material world, known as Mayavadis and personalists like this. So that principle of respective authority, following authority, like that, that is a very essential principle in devotional service. And we see in the devotional line, whenever that principle is followed, there is all spiritual and material perfection. And when it's not being followed, then there's very minimal spiritual or even material perfection. Right? We see Bali Maharaj served his guru and worshipped his guru and followed his instructions, and he got all material perfection. Right? Like this. So the point is it has to be followed. It has to be followed. Well, then Indra insulted his guru or ignored his guru, and he lost everything. So we see that the spiritual perfection comes by this. Someone may say, well, the Bali Maharaj, then when Vamana came, he didn't follow. That's because the spiritual master was not giving proper spiritual direction, because we were dealing with the spiritual aspect here, not material. Right? Sukracharya is expert in the material scene. He knows how to run the material world and get the results by following the Shastra. Right? And even Sukracharya, when he was telling Bali Maharaj, don't give anything to this Vamana Dev, he was still quoting Shastra. Here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he'll take everything away from you, he is Hari, all these different things. He's quoting Shastra. So he's not just speculating. He's not making up his own philosophy. He's just a materialist. That's all. Like that. Okay, so we see here is this principle, spiritual life begins with this. Human life begins with this. If there's no following of authority, we're not actually dealing with human life. We're not. Then you're just dealing with whoever shouts the loudest or whoever's the strongest. This is in the Shastras called the Matsyanyaya. Is there anything more to it? It's just called Matsyanyaya. Matsyanyaya means the logic of the fish. So in the ocean, whichever fish is bigger, then they win. Right? If you're a small fish and someone else is the bigger fish, you either respect them or if you get too close, you'll be eaten by them. So that is if there isn't a proper understanding of the hierarchy, then Matsyanyaya functions. We see that this works. It's not just something that's, happens in India. we see in European history also that this is very much the fact. You have a king, and then somebody has difficulty with the king, generally the bourgeois, because they want more and they want the king to have less. And then they start a revolution with the people, the masses. They get rid of the king, and because they themselves aren't kings, they can't organize it. And then the people, since they've been agitated, then throw them out also. And then the people are even less qualified to run the thing. And then the big fish walks in and takes over. If one checks, reads history, one will find that this is what happens in all these revolutions. It's just, that's the common thing. Is that when once you remove respect for authority, like French Revolution, you remove that, then you get Napoleon, right? You get rid of the Kaiser, you get Hitler, you get rid of the Tsar, you get Stalin. You know, it's just the way it works. That's all. It's just the modes of nature. When there's hierarchy, when there's hierarchy, then you get things stay. They work. They may be working at their best or not, but at least they work. But once you get rid of that, then simply who's strong, they come in. Yes. One must note that this person is French. Also. Yeah, yeah.
They were claiming that these kings were not fixed to be kings.
Oh, that's there. Yes, but then the problem is the kings were lower than Shudras, but the bourgeois was lower than that. You know, because otherwise no king goes to the masses and agitates the masses. Because they know what that will do. Right? All of these countries, since that has happened, they've all been a mess. Because the people are always disturbed. So the whole thing is you have two aspects. You have the position and you have the individual in the position. The proper situation is the position always must be respected. And the person in the position should be respectable. Then it works very nicely. Everybody's satisfied. If the person in the position is not so respectable, not so qualified, still it is better than not having the position at all. Because once you remove the position, then you pull out the principle that is there in the nature of the living entity, in the human nature, of following authority. Right? So then, one will follow authority, but then one takes up the animal system, which is whoever is strongest, then they're in charge.
Right?
No, we're talking that the position. A Brahmin by birth can only be considered a Brahmin in the Asuric Varnashram system. In the Daiva Varnashram, they wouldn't be. It means Daiva Varnashram, you wouldn't have someone necessarily in the position. You will, it's like you will do with what you have, the best you have. It's like, how you say? In a village, there's a saying, Bengali saying, in a village of blind men, a man with one eye is king. Right? So he may not be the best, but he's better than whatever else. So it's like, who has a little bit of a managerial ability, they'll be put in these managers. Maybe they're not the best, but at least they know more than someone else. Right? Means we generally see, if we look at it, some of the different things is the kings were not qualified, but then the people who were under them were also very, very materialistic, and they wanted to move up. Right? And they were not being given the opportunity, because the king also knows they're not very qualified either. So in this way you have all these unqualified people. That's another discussion. But this is the point that Prabhupada says, if the eye has a cataract, you remove the cataract, you don't remove the eye. So in here, the revolution then removed the whole concept of a king, advisors, the whole hierarchy, everything sits in place. It's not easy to put in place a whole administration, you know? Especially certain aspects, they go on by tradition. Just people accept it because that's the way it is. So then, the point is that it should be that it's working and the people understand it and believe in it. So then it works very nicely. Then they're very happy. If they don't know, they're just doing it because it's there or out of fear, then that's not ideal. It's not ideal. So then, if that's the case, then a more qualified person could be put into place. See, the proper thing is if they didn't like the king, then they themselves can remove the king and then put someone else in there that should be there. If they can't do that, then they're not the persons to do it in the first place. Because the bourgeois couldn't do it on their own. That means they were not very qualified. If they were very qualified, they would have had the influence to do it. Others would have seen, this person is very qualified. Good qualities, good administrative abilities, good vision, and they would have been support from other people with power. And then they would have found he was in there, you know, by his own arrangements. Like that. We see that in India. If you read the histories of the, you know, more contemporary Indian kings, these things are always going on because they have power. But no one ever thought throw out the monarchy. It was just a matter of this person, even the ministers or other, they may completely remain. The prime ministers, other things, nothing may change in the whole kingdom. All they do is change the person on top. You know? Then if need be, they'll change others. But here, they threw out the whole system. So then, from that, then it became a chaos. And then in the chaos, no one knows what to do. And then someone who's very powerful and dynamic, like Napoleon, then can come in and just take over. But otherwise, you know, how would it work? Understand? And so it's not a good system. So revolution is not a good system. One has to still work through this. One can say the ends justify the means, but we don't necessarily find that. Devotional service creates devotional service. And only material problems can only be solved with spiritual solutions. And if you, even material solutions, good material solutions for material problems still have to come from the, based on the Vedic principles. So then, it's not a good system anyway. Revolution is not, because revolution means one gets agitated, one thinks one's going to get more than one can anyway. At the end of the day, the common person would have the same amount under the new management as the old. Just the bourgeois being very clever, utilize them to get what they want. That's all. So it's not, you know, it means... That's why you have to have a standard, otherwise it's all mundane. And you have to have a standard, and that standard is best given by God. Then we see, then everybody can be satisfied. So if it's a matter of the king is not properly situated, or the head of state is not proper, then you have to put in a proper head of state. You don't get rid of the whole concept of head of state. Like that. Otherwise, you know, things, how much more is it going on nice?
How could believers get the mercy of Ananda Maharaj? All through the way, his guru is teaching about only materialism, how to get materialism, and he's emphasizing it.
How could he get? Because devotional service, did you hear? He was saying is, how could Bali Maharaj get the mercy of the Lord since his guru was always teaching about material things? See, material qualification doesn't give rise for devotional service. Devotional service comes on its own. Desire for devotional service comes. So we can understand that Bali Maharaj is a very qualified person, otherwise he wouldn't get the direct association of the Lord. So seeing the Lord, then he desired to serve him. So then that began, that was his fortune. His desire to serve the Lord, then that became his fortune. Okay? Means if you are there that you can directly see the Lord, speak the Lord, and take direction from the Lord, then you can accept the Lord also as your spiritual master. Right? But if you don't have that direct relationship, then you accept someone else. You know, you accept an advanced devotee. You understand? We all have direct association with the Lord. Lord's in our heart, but we're not listening. Therefore, we accept the spiritual master who comes outside, who manifests in front of us. Okay?
In the previous class of Guru Nindra Sahaja, if at all I have relationship, I'm getting siksha and I'm inspired to take initiation from somewhere, and because the nature is not similar, so I don't take, so I take initiation from some Maharaj. The instruction which he gives, because I've already placed my faith in Samana Maharaj, because I feel that I can relate to him, but the instruction which my Diksha Guru gives, and somehow that I don't feel like understanding, or I don't feel understanding or something.
What's the point?
So if I say to Siksha Guru, his instruction on the same thing is different from when Siksha Guru says on the same is on the same thing different. So out of both of them, whom should I find?
You all understood his question. Could you hear it? Oh. You could hear it? He's saying, is you're hearing from one Siksha Guru, but because the relationship isn't quite right, means you don't really understand what he says and he doesn't understand what you're thinking. Then you take initiation from another spiritual master, right? Who supposedly is because the relationship is more in line. But because you put your faith in the first one who you don't understand, then when the one who's given initiation, then when he gives instructions, because your faith is in the other one, and so therefore you consider you don't understand the one who's given initiation, then when the two of them give instruction, which one do you follow? Right? No. Means if the relationship was so good with the first one, that it was really, the nature was proper, that would be the person you take diksha from, because they can address your nature, you can understand what they're saying. But since that's not there, then you find someone else who the nature is similar, so what they say and what you ask is a question, they can all relate to it. Right? So therefore, the one who gave the diksha will be the prominent Siksha Guru. Because you do understand them, they understand you. And the first one, who you may have met first and have a lot of faith in, but because the nature isn't close enough, sometimes what they say you don't understand, if what you say they don't understand. And so then that will be taken as secondary. And you may have specific questions you ask or this or that, but it all must be under the support of the, or as support to the spiritual master's given, the diksha. Right? And all that between both of them must be in line with what Srila Prabhupada says. Because Srila Prabhupada is the predominant Siksha Guru, the source of all the instructions that the others are seeking. Okay? Yeah, yes. We can? Did I say that? No, I was trying to say that about question is this, I mentioned you can perform spontaneous devotional service in the neophyte stage. What I was saying is that there are those who profess this, and they are what Prabhupada is talking about, is that they are in the neophyte stage, they haven't crossed the Narta Nivriti, and so, and they are talking, they are absorbed in the gopis and all these different things. And because of that, then it's not actually spontaneous devotional service. They may know some of the facts and figures of spontaneous devotional service and some of the how it workings of it, but that's like, it's still within the realm of sambandha, because it only becomes abhideya when you can work it, right? I have knowledge of abhideya, but that's still sambandha. I understand how it functions, and it understands my relationship, and this is what I have to do. So it's only the knowledge of the abhideya, and it helps establish my relationship with Krishna, right? But if I practice it, then it becomes abhideya, right? Relationship and practice is called abhideya, right? Relationship itself is sambandha, right? Relationship and practice, that's abhideya. And the mood of that practice should be prema, and that's prayojana, that's the goal. So in the neophyte stage, because of the anartas, one may know these things, the mind will always be distracted by these material distractions, disturbances. So one won't be able to think of the residents of Vrindavan all the time. One may sit down, get a book, read about it, and during those moments one may be absorbed. So that is also hearing, chanting, that is there. But the point is spontaneous devotional service, Prabhupada points out, one is doing it all the time. So that means whatever you're doing, one is able to remember those things. And one is able to think how to do that in the mood of those devotees. Right? Just like in the beginning, when you're not very expert at something, the thing itself takes your whole absorption. But when you're so expert at it, you may be thinking of other things, and it just happens out of habit. So what we're saying is when one comes to the liberated platform, the body goes through the motions of sadhana bhakti and the various prescribed duties very easily. You know, you see somebody, you react in a particular way, you see another person, you react in a different way, a different situation. You just automatically react because you've been practiced that. But in the mind, one will be thinking of, one will be in the spiritual realm. Right? So what I was mentioning is that when one crosses anartha nivriti, the gross aspects of it, and gets established in nishta, which is the madhyam platform, then some beginnings of that can be there, but it still is not so focused. There may be a general idea of what is going on. But basically it's only until ruchi, when one develops a strong taste for the devotional process, then one gives up the subtle aspects of the material contamination. Then we see that at that point, when there's a taste, then the aspects of spontaneous devotional service can start to come in more. But it's only until one basically has got to asakti and to the Brahma-Bhuta, the end of asakti, when one comes to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, that then that is very complete. Then one's absorption, there's nothing to obstruct the absorption. If one has had association with devotees who are in the mood of spontaneous devotional service, right? Then that will come, because in that association one will be attracted to that. So if you read you know, Prabhupada's books, the books of the Acharyas, you're getting that association, right? You're seeing the devotees who are in that position. So coming to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, one will be naturally attracted to those, because there's nothing in the material world to attract one. And then of all the spiritual activities, these are the most attractive, Krishna's pastimes and Vrindavan. So one will be attracted to them, naturally. So that is where it's like the full spontaneous platform is there, because there's nothing material to hold it up. But on the in the neophyte platform, it's not really much one can do concerning it because one's mind is distracted by so many other things. So it's you can't really, you know, like I can give examples, and you know, an 8-year-old girl can conjure about, you know, getting married and this and that. But the mood of it, you know, she can think about the facilities, but the mood of it she won't know at all. Right? But a girl who's reached her teens can understand the mood, though she doesn't understand the depth of maturity and the realities of it. You understand? So the neophyte basically can't understand anything about it. The Madhyama has a slight understanding. And then the Uttama then can gain a very complete understanding. Right? That's why we see in here it's not being talked about. It's something talked about as one is performing the devotional activities, the regulative principles, and then even when one comes to the spontaneous platform, one is still doing the regulative principles. And then Prabhupada mentions the sahajiyas, then they, in the neophyte platform, give up the principles and say that they're very advanced. So one has to be very careful about this, because it's attractive, right? It looks like something very nice. But one has to be qualified. Therefore, not so much discussion is talked about it. Right? It's mentioned very slightly, and those who have an understanding of it will be attracted by it. Those who don't will not notice it. Right? Until they become more mature. Okay? Anything else? Yes.
When you say that material qualifications are not enough to perform devotional service. But the main thing you're talking about authority without qualification. We have to respect authority without qualification.
No, we have to respect the principle of authority.
Then
we should respect the person as a devotee. Now, whether we have respect for the person as someone who has the qualifications for that position, that's another thing. Right? There's respect for the position. There's respect for the individual, just as a devotee, whatever their position is, doesn't matter. Then there may be the respect for that person who is in the position because they have the qualifications, right? You're respecting the qualifications. So if one breaks it down into that, then it makes it much more easy to deal. That's what you see in India, is that someone's in a position, they'll be respected. Maybe they have the qualifications or not, but they're respected. Right? And you deal with them in that way. Now, to those who are in the position to actually deal with that, deal with who's qualified and not, then they should see that either the person is trained and becomes qualified, or a qualified person is put into place. Right? Because otherwise, a devotee who doesn't know anything about that, let's say you're talking about someone in position of management, someone who doesn't understand management wouldn't be able to choose who is a good manager. But people who can manage, they can choose who's a good manager. Right? So that system has to be respected, because one can say, well, it's an emergency, this, that, but then one has to really see if the results come. Because the whole point is you should get results. If someone's not qualified, they're in a position, then we may, if there's no one else and they're better than anybody else, so they're not so qualified, then that's practical to just leave them in the position. But if there's someone more qualified, then that person should be put there. Like that. But to just take things and turn things upside down, then there's no benefit. For all the emergency, this and that, then one loses. Because if the principle of respect for authority is lost, basically you don't have a very solid spiritual life. Because the 64 items of devotional service start with approaching spiritual authority. It's the first principle. So if one doesn't have respect for authority, one's not going to have respect for spiritual authority. Right? You know what I'm saying? Means it's just like, let's say, a child grows up in a family, they don't have respect for their parents. It's going to be difficult for them to respect, you know, the temple authorities. You know, it just because they're not a, by intellectually they can understand that it should be, and they can practice it and develop it, but they don't have practice from before. Right? If someone has grown up in a family that had respect for their mother, father, their older brothers and sisters, you know, their aunts or uncles or grandparents, then when they get into the contact of other authorities, then it's very easy for them to accept, because they're practiced in the principle of respecting authority. Right? There may be some different details of that. Intimacy with the parents and intimacy with the temple president may be a little different. You know, the flavor is slightly different. But the principle is practiced and understood. Right? Then it becomes also then very easy to accept the principle of surrendering to a spiritual master. Because otherwise we see so many times devotees, they have great affection and faith in their spiritual master, and they're, you know, very absorbed in this and that. And then when the spiritual master gives them some specific instruction that may not be kind of in line with what they, how they were thinking, you know, some aspect of surrendering or some anartha that is in their heart that they should address and remove, you know, or their ego has become, you know, disproportionate to their, you know, position or service, then many times you find that their faith in the spiritual master goes down. Right? Because they're not actually practiced at this principle. Otherwise, it wouldn't go down. Right? They lose faith, not just in the person, but in the concept. Right? Otherwise, see, there's a lot of difference between the person in the position and the position itself. Right? Just because you have somebody in a position that's not good doesn't mean that we lose our faith in the concept of the position. Right? If we have a bad temple president, doesn't mean that now we lose faith in the concept of temple presidents. Right? We just, all it is this particular individual is not a good temple president. Or at least not in this situation. Maybe if they were in a different temple, a different country, a different something, it might be different. If they're actually a manager, it just may be the wrong situation. Right? You put them in a different situation, they may go fine. Is that understood? Right? But the concept that there'll be a temple president who will run the temple, that can not be there. That has to be there. You know? Because that principle is there. You have the head of a, let's say you have a Namhat Sangha, you know, or you know, some preaching party, anything. There's always somebody who's leading it, and it makes life easier. If you want to manage something, there should be someone who's in charge to see it gets done. Like that. So we have faith in that. But that individual may have a difficulty. So when you hear that devotees have difficulty in faith in you know, authorities, then that's because the concept of authority is not very strong or very practiced in their being. You understand? Otherwise, you could have so many people in positions of authority behave badly. But it may be, okay, we have to be very careful in finding a person, and where we have to train them very nicely, so many things, but the concept of the authority can never go away. Right? You understand what I'm saying? So it's become very popular nowadays to lump them all together, and because you have a person who may not behave nicely, then the position of authority also gets thrown out with it. And this is exactly what Prabhupada says. When the eye has a cataract, you remove the cataract, you don't remove the eye. Because then you have nothing. Right? You know, or the English saying, the baby in the bathwater. You bathe the baby in the water is dirty. You throw away the water. You throw away the baby also. You don't have a baby. Right? So we can throw away the concept of authority, but then we do not have a mission. because you lose faith in the lower, you don't have connection to the higher. Right? You have a chain. And you break the chain, this side of the chain and that side of the chain don't have a connection. If a link is weak, you change the link. You don't change the system. So that's the thing, is not being well, you know, just not being well trained, then we have the tendency to play around with principles that are established by God and we don't have better solutions for. Right? God's the most qualified person. And he has established these basic principles. And then one has to see best how to make everything work. If we make up our own systems, we might find that they're inferior. As we see in the, you know, so much in the non-Vedic civilizations, you don't see great idyllic life. There hasn't been for thousands of years. Why there'll be today? Right? In modern civilization that you can take back to the Greeks, there's never been ideal situations, ideal leaders, ideal anything. The people have never been ideally situated, ideally happy. Right? Like this. So it's just a matter of just where the problem is. Right? Prabhupada says, you have the boil on one knee and then you pray to the Lord and transfer to the other knee. That's all. Some problems that someone's facing, you get rid of that, but then other problems come up. So the point is respect for authority must be there. It's one of the fundamental principles. It's one of the main things that in brahmachari training is taught. And that's after already it's been nicely established by the parents. Right? The father has established the authority, the mother has established the authority, the father in the child's mind. Then from there they can expand that into respect of other authorities, managerial authorities, spiritual authorities, God is authority. Right? And then this works. One has to establish. Right. So now, next section, chapter 17, it's called Ecstatic Love. By the process of executing regulative devotional service, one is actually elevated onto the transcendental stage, beyond the material modes of nature. At that time, one's heart becomes illuminated like the sun. The sun is far above the planetary systems. There's no possibility of its being covered by any kind of cloud. Similarly, when a devotee is purified like the sun, from his pure heart there is a diffusion of ecstatic love, which is more glorious than the sunshine. Only at that time is the attachment to Krishna perfect. Spontaneously, the devotee becomes eager to serve the Lord in his ecstatic love. At this stage, the devotee is on the platform of Uttam Adhikari, perfect devotion. Such a devotee has no agitation for material affections and is interested only in the service of Radha and Krishna. So these clouds, the acharyas many times then refer to as the clouds of the anartas, clouds of mist of illusion, the clouds of anartas. So when one comes to the Brahma-Bhuta platform by the process of regulated devotional service, all these anartas are removed, all these clouds are gone. And then one becomes here, says here, attached. Only at that time is the attachment to Krishna perfect. Right? So you have asakti, which is attachment. But when one comes to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, then that attachment becomes perfect. Right? And then the spontaneous attraction becomes perfect. So at this stage we see all these happen. So this is this platform. Beyond the modes of nature. Right? Then there's nothing to keep one from having affection for Radha and Krishna. And continuing. To clarify, In the previous chapters, the symptoms of devotional service were explained along with instructions as how we may execute devotional service with our present senses and gradually rise to the platform of ecstasy in spontaneous love. And the two kinds of devotional service, namely devotional service through regulated principles and through spontaneous love, were discussed. Within the stage of the regulated principles of devotional service, there are two divisions, namely executive and effective. The effective portion of devotional service is called bhava, or ecstasy. In this connection, there is a statement in the tantras that ecstasy is the first symptom of pure love for the personality of Godhead. And in that stage, one is sometimes found shedding tears or shivering. Not always are these symptoms manifest, but occasionally. When King Ambarish was put into difficulty by Durvasa, he began to think of the lotus feet of the Lord, and thus there were some changes in his body, and tears were falling from his eyes. These symptoms are activities of ecstasy. They are visible in the shivering of the body and the shedding of tears. After the outward appearance of these ecstatic symptoms, they stay within the mind, and continuation of the ecstasy is called samadhi. The stage of appreciation becomes the cause of future exchange of loving affairs with Krishna. So here, this stage of appreciation becomes the cause of future exchange. This means from here, when one comes fully into samadhi in this platform of ecstatic love, then that gives rise for coming into the platform of prema. Like this. So that constant absorption, though these symptoms may not be there, but in the mind one is always absorbed in the Lord. Elevation to the stage of ecstasy can be possible in two ways. One is by constant association with pure devotees. The other way is by the special mercy of Krishna, or the mercy of a pure devotee of Krishna. Elevation to the ecstatic stage of life is generally attained through association with pure devotees, while elevation to that stage by the special mercy of Krishna or his devotees is very rare. The purport is that one should execute devotional service rigidly in the association of devotees, so that there will be certainty in raising oneself to the ecstatic position. In special cases, of course, there is special favor from Krishna, and although we should always expect that, we should not sit idly and simply wait for Krishna's special mercy. The regular duties must be performed. It is just as when sometimes it is found that a person who never attended school or college may be recognized as a great scholar, or an honorary degree from great universities may be offered to him. But this does not mean that one should avoid school and expect to automatically receive an honorary degree from some university. Similarly, one should devoutly execute the regulative principles of devotional service, and at the same time hope for Krishna's favor or for his devotee's favor. An example of rising to the stage of ecstatic love by executing the regulative principles of devotional service is given in the life story of Narada, which is described to Vyasadeva in Srimad Bhagavatam. Narada tells there of his previous life and how he developed to the stage of ecstatic love. He was engaged in the service of great devotees and used to hear their talks and songs. Because he had the opportunity to hear these pastimes and songs of Krishna from the mouths of pure devotees, he became very attracted within his heart. Because he had become so eager to hear these topics, he gradually developed within himself an ecstatic love for Krishna. This ecstatic love is prior to the pure love of Krishna, because in the next verse, Narada confirms that by the gradual process of hearing from the great sages, he developed love of God. In that connection, Narada continues to say in the first canto of 5th chapter, verse 28 of the Bhagavatam, "First I passed my days in the association of the great sages during the rainy autumn season. Every morning and evening I heard them while they were singing and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, and thus my heart gradually became purified. As soon as I heard them with great attention, the influence of the modes of material ignorance and passion disappeared, and I became firmly fixed in devotional service to the Lord." These are practical examples of how one can develop the stage of ecstatic love simply by the association of pure devotees. It is essential, therefore, that one constantly associate with pure devotees who are engaged morning and evening in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. In this way, one will get the chance to purify his heart and develop his ecstatic love for Krishna. This statement is also confirmed in the third canto, 25th chapter, verse 25 of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Lord Kapila says, "My dear mother, when a person is actually in association with pure devotees, the sublime potency of my devotional service can be experienced." In other words, when a pure devotee speaks, his words act upon the hearts of the audience. What is the secret of hearing and chanting? A professional speaker cannot impress transcendental ecstasy within the hearts of the listeners. However, when a realized soul who is engaged in the service of the Lord is speaking, he has the potency to inject spiritual life within the audience. One should therefore seek the association of such pure and alert devotees. And by such association and service, a neophyte devotee will certainly develop attachment, love, and devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Padma Puran, there is the story of a neophyte devotee who in order to raise herself to the ecstatic platform, danced all night to invoke the Lord's grace upon her. Sometimes, however, it is found that without undergoing any devotional process, one all of a sudden develops devotion for Lord Krishna. This sudden development of the devotional attitude in a person must be understood as a special mercy of Krishna or his devotee. This apparently accidental development of ecstatic feelings through the causeless mercy of Krishna can be divided into three groups: simply by speaking, simply by glancing, and simply by good wishes. In the Naradiya Purana, there is a statement about development of ecstatic love simply by speaking. Lord Krishna said to Narada, "O best of the brahmanas, I wish that you may develop unalloyed devotional service to me, which is full of transcendental bliss and all auspiciousness." In the Skanda Purana, there is a statement about developing ecstatic love towards Krishna simply by glancing. It is stated there, "When the inhabitants of Jungla province saw the personality of Godhead Krishna, they were so stricken with feeling that they could not withdraw their glance from him." As far as heartfelt wishes are concerned, there's a statement in the Shuka Samhita where Narada tells Sri Vyasadeva, "You have a son who is the greatest devotee of the personality of Godhead, and I can observe that without any following of the regulative principles of devotional service, He is already enriched with many of the symptoms achieved by the execution of devotional service after many, many births." As for ecstatic love of Krishna, there is a statement in the 7th canto, 4th chapter, verse 36 of Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Narada addresses King Yudhishthira, "My dear king, it is very difficult to describe the character of Prahlad. He developed a natural attraction for Krishna, and whatever I can explain about his character will simply be an arrangement of words. His actual character is impossible to describe." This means that Narada himself admitted that the natural development of Prahlad's ecstatic love was by the grace of Lord Krishna. This natural attraction for Krishna on the part of Prahlad was developed simply by the mercy of Narada. When Prahlad Maharaj was within the womb of his mother, he was being sympathetically instructed by Narada about the science of devotional service. And at that time, Narada was wishing that the child within the womb would also take advantage of the instructions. Because Narada, an authorized devotee and great associate of the Personality of Godhead, was desiring auspiciousness for Prahlad Maharaj, he developed all the characteristics of a high-grade devotee. This is called natural attraction. It is caused by the special grace of the Personality of Godhead, or by the special grace of a great devotee like Narada. There is a statement in the Skanda Purana wherein Parvata Muni tells Narada, "My dear Narada, of all saintly persons, you are so great and glorious that simply by your good wishes, a low-born hunter also has become a great elevated devotee of Lord Krishna." This ecstatic love for Krishna can be divided into five divisions, which will be described by Srila Rupa Goswami later on. So we see, by following the process of the regulated devotional service, then in the association of devotees, then one develops this attraction. One develops this kind of attraction, and one becomes fixed in devotional service because passion, ignorance, or anartha nivritti, that happens, it goes on. One becomes fixed. Then from that, then one becomes attached. to Krishna. And then from there, then these ecstatic symptoms can develop. So that is what is described here. So end at this point. Then tomorrow we have chapter 18, the character of one in ecstatic love. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Rupa Goswami Pada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivarinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Prasadhi.